is their life on Mars.
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Joy Powers. On this day in 1964, the spacecraft Mariner 4 was launched into its 228-day mission that would bring the spacecraft within 6,000 miles of Mars. That mission resulted in the first close-up photos of the red planet, Mars.
In celebration of that historic mission, November 28th is known as Red Planet Day. Astronomy contributor Gene Creighton joined Lake Effect's Bonnie North in the studio to talk more about Mars and how far we've come in its exploration.
Hello, Jean. It's great to see you.
Hi, Bonnie. Nice to be here.
Well, I understand it's a very special day in astronomy.
November 28th is Mars Day.
Mars Day. And we have talked a lot about Mars over the years that you and I have been doing this. All kinds of different interesting things have happened during the time that we have been doing these conversations. So I guess, what are we celebrating? You know, is there anything new or is this just in general?
Well, I think it's to commemorate that Mariner 4 orbited Mars in 1964. So that starts this long history, this flirtation we've had with Mars. And at first, of course, all we wanted to do is learn more about the environment. But now, of course, we want to get there. We want to send a person there. There have been 40 missions to Mars. I think about 23 or so have been successful, which, of course, means that you have a 50-50 chance of making it. We have two rovers right now that are working and sending data, Curiosity and Opportunity, and there are five orbiters. Since you may not recall.
What makes you think that?
Yeah, I don't. Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. There's the Mars Odyssey that has been in orbit for 15 plus years, so has by long and away the record. Mars Express, that was a European Space Agency mission. MAVEN, and I'm not sure if I'm saying this correctly, Mangalyaan, that was from the Indian Space Agency. So there are five machines that are orbiting Mars and are telling us information about the weather, about water vapor, about all kinds of things relating to Mars, also communicating with the rovers and relaying the information back home.
I mean, when you think about what happened since 1964 mm-hmm. to now and what we've learned about what Mars is like, what makes up Mars, the fact that we could actually, yes, we would need atmosphere. We'd need to create atmosphere, but we could go there if we could figure out, you know, the actual transport.
So apparently here is where we stand in terms of timelines. There is the more aggressive timeline of SpaceX, for example. They are hoping to get people to the International Space Station in 2017. And they're hoping to get people on Mars in 2024.
That's
NASA,
aggressive.
That's aggressive. Yeah. That's very aggressive. And I think the idea is that we have to relax the very safe, cautious approach that NASA takes. And, you know, if I don't want to sound too cavalier about this, but basically they're thinking any kind of major step requires some risk and some people might die. NASA, however, feels like this is a step-by-step process. If we wanted to keep people on Mars for any length of time, which we basically would have to in order to come back to Earth, we need to first get a person in orbit of Mars, which is supposedly going to be in the mid-30s. And another decade will pass before they feel like they can safely get people to Mars. Now, it could be, and I'm hoping, I think everybody's hoping, that perhaps the two will work closely together and maybe we can improve both the results and the timeline simultaneously.
Right. Shorten the timeline a bit,
but make it safer.
Make it safer for folks. I mean, one of the things we've talked about over the years is part of the issue is humans in space in general, being in zero gravity, that just takes a toll on the human body that we haven't been able to figure out how to mitigate.
That's right. So there are basically two pieces here of the puzzle. One is the technical wherewithal of getting you know, a spacecraft to Mars with the capability of coming back. This at the moment is definitely an unsolved problem. There is so much fuel required to even leave Mars. You can't have that fuel with you leaving the Earth from the first place. So you basically have a couple of choices, but what seems to be the more likely one is to get them to an orbiter around Earth, then have built a transporter or have something that's in space already that will attach to that, that will have a larger space for them to be in, but also, you know, their food, water, etc., and take that to Mars and then leave that big thing in orbit of Mars and then have a little orbiter going to the ground. And then when they're ready to leave, they take that same thing back. They hook up to the ferry, if you will, and go back to Earth. That probably, at least NASA's now best idea of how this could even possibly work.
And we're talking years. I mean, this is going to take many, assuming all of that works, just as you described it, this is not something that's happening in 1 year.
No, but it could well happen in our lifetime. I mean, I'm thinking that I'm going to live to see something like this.
But I was thinking just in terms of the actual journey and the time there and the journey back.
I understand.
Yeah.
So we have the technical piece, which everybody is worried about because at the moment, as I said, we can't even do it. But then there's this other piece that NASA is significantly more invested in because, of course, it has more data. So how do we get people safely? How could people be on Mars for any length of time? And it's true, we've talked about this together before, but some of the data is coming in. The two astronauts, Scott Kelly and the Russian gentleman, Kornienko is his name, they spent 340 days in space. And as you can imagine, they had a battery of tests when they came back home. Some of the descriptions that they themselves have are so amazing, if you think about it, that breathing on Earth becomes a chore because your lung muscles, your chest muscles have weakened, right? Now, check out this statistic. You lose 1% of bone mass per month in space. So the machines that they use sort of at the ISS are much too big, too heavy. So they certainly help slow down that process, but you couldn't get something like that to Mars. So you would need something else, right? Months after Scott Kelly came back, apparently his feet still hurt because you get unused to stepping on them all the time, right? You're floating around. Not to mention the puffy faces because all this liquid is accumulating in your face. More importantly, there are vision issues. So fluid gathers behind your optical nerve and it puts pressure on it. So some people experience pretty serious blurry vision. And in some cases, it doesn't completely resolve when they come back to Earth. So all of these things are, of course, an issue. But there's also the psychological issues that I can only begin to imagine. I grew up, as you know, on the Mediterranean in Greece. And I find sometimes winters here to be pretty hard on my psyche. I can't imagine being closed up in a very small space where there's nothing green, there's nothing fresh for months and many months and possibly in some cases years. So even if you selected, of course, carefully the kind of people who can tolerate isolation and boredom, who are mentally resilient, who have excellent social skills, you'd still have people who are getting pretty restless to see a green leaf and hug a loved one.
Well, and of course, when they get to Mars, there's not going to be a green leaf.
That's
and their
right.
loved ones are there, not going to be
no
there.
There's no relief. And
right.
in fact, the medical people, the experts say, when they get to Mars, they'll be sick. So they'll have to sort that out. There are technical other issues that I hadn't really thought about, but if you think about it, of course, it makes a lot of sense that all the life support is at the moment, when you zip over to the ISS, there are refueling missions, right? Oh, something broke, a filter broke, you just bring another one. That wouldn't be a possibility. You'd have to bring everything that could possibly break with you so that you can replace it. Well, that means that things better be breaking a whole lot less. As I'm sure you know, the water that people use is basically has to be recycled. So urine, sweat, all that gets recycled. Given that people are losing a lot of their bone mass, it's full of calcium.
Sure, I was just
saying
minerals.
So the filters get all grogged, like just basically useless. So they need to be replaced. Water can get microbes again. These things are, in principle, simple issues that can be resolved, but you need to have the means of fixing them, because if you can't solve your water and air issue, then, you know, the game is over.
I was going to say the end of the mission.
That's right.
Pretty much.
So they're in the process of designing some of these that are just much more resilient, much more long-lasting. And yet, you know, people have identified 50 landing sites. The idea is they have to be within 50 degrees of the equator to make sure that it makes the takeoff of potential people to come back to Earth easier. Money, of course, is an issue. So in today's dollars, the Apollo mission cost $140 billion. Today, reasonable estimates place Mars at $450 billion U.S. dollars. And at the moment, there's a fraction of that available, at least in budgets as we understand them now. So we would definitely need to pick up a different fundraising pace.
I just had a mental picture of a GoFundMe campaign to get to Mars.
Right.
Right. NASA's running its own GoFundMe campaign.
That's
Which
seems Kickstarter.
Kickstarter.
So, I mean, as again, you can imagine that there's some possibly, you know, it would have to probably be international. It would have to be some combination of private and public funded project. But of course, we all know that people are excited about Mars. I was reading that, I think I have this number correctly, that there are 170,000 applicants for astronauts within the last few months for something like 14 positions. But these could be the people who train to go to Mars. Everybody says, don't promise them that, because it may or may not happen on their watch. But I think it's just marvelous that people are reaching for something so ambitious. Sometimes people ask me what I want to go to Mars. And the fact is, no, I'm happy to let somebody else do it. But boy, will I cheer them on.
Jean Creighton is the director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find I'm not the man that